You can take the girl out of the culture, but can't take the culture out of a girl. What culture am I talking about? The Homo sapiens culture. The culture of the mind. The cult of the mind. I am not the first person to talk about it, talk against it. Not even the second, lol. But it is all in vain. The mind, unattended, will continue doing what the mind does, worry about the past, worry about the future, and be completely clueless about what's going on. Especially clueless about the effect it has on you and the quality of your life, how you feel about yourself and about your life. In fact, your mind considers you simply a vehicle, and I don't think you expect yourself worrying about your vehicle's emotions. After all, it's a thing, isn't it? Its job is to carry you around. And even in olden times, when horses were the main vehicles, the riders didn't much worry about the emotions of the horse. They probably worried about feeding it and getting it water, washing it, etc., but not its emotions. And by the same token, your mind doesn't worry about your emotions. And, whether you agree with this or not, how you feel is what defines the quality of your life. You can have success, a beautiful family, if you don't feel good about it, and if you don't feel good about yourself, the quality of your life is shit. In fact, the mind is a machine, a simple machine, completely clueless about the world, reality, what's going on, or what you want. It is like a computer you feed with garbage, and are surprised that garbage comes out. Giggo is the technical term. Garbage in, garbage out. After 30 years of being in the business to cause you experiencing yourself in the world is enjoyable, I finally got to this point, that unless I can remove the garbage input, you will reliably experience the garbage output. Your feelings come from that output. No matter where you are, no matter what you have accomplished, if your mind tells you that you are nothing, not important, what you feel doesn't matter, that you are useless and stupid. And unless we change the input, the same garbage that has been coming out will continue regardless of accomplishment, billions, or anything considered good, your mind will continue telling you the same thing your original input produced. You'll continue fighting, fixing, overcoming that garbage. Here is an example, this time from a book, not my poor students. LOL. Book, The Cipher. Character, Nina. She was found, 1 month old, in a trash can. No matter her accomplishments, she fights being a piece of trash, a throwaway. Book, Any Harry Bosch book by Michael Connelly. Harry Bosch is the illegitimate son of a street prostitute who gets murdered. He becomes the protector and avenging angel of the discarded, the murdered, the fringe, who need to get justice. It is garbage in, garbage out. These are two examples of people who found an outlet, law enforcement, for their garbage output. All the other people are looking for an outlet, and rarely find it. If you were devalued, and it wasn't, you will try to prove that you are worthy, that you are not a piece of thing, like you were treated as a child. Even if it only happened in one memorable moment. If you were told, the candy is for other people, not you, because other people are more important than you, you'll spend a whole life between being giving away everything, and being stingy at the same time, both with yourself and others. If you were treated as not important, all your thoughts will be around being important, won't they? My assertion is that your decision about that early incident, was based on the viewpoint of a small child, and what you wanted at the time. Candy? Comfort? Playing? A hug? And they, the pesky adults, didn't give it to you. But didn't just deny what you wanted. They may have beaten you, yelled at you, dismissed you, diminished you. Whatever you said about what happened is the input the mind has to give you the output. And what you said was the garbage. You only know what you know from one fixed and narrow vantage point. And you really have no idea about what you see. And you have no idea about what you don't know. You don't know that you don't know 99% of what is knowable, but you behave as if you did. And make binding decisions from it. How it should have been. What was wrong, what people meant when they did that horrible thing to you, what it means about you, etc. In addition to that, you start to treat first the perpetrators and then eventually everyone as a thing that deserves your contempt, your punishment. And then you devise methods, dreams, daydreams, all kinds of mental construct how you can fix that old incident where you weren't enough for them, where you failed, where you couldn't just be yourself. A world of things with a machine in their head is the result. The sad thing is that these things have a design that says, clearly, That being a thing is not how it is supposed to be. That listening to the mind as if it knew anything is not how it was supposed to be. The original design is clearly delineated in the DNA. There is a group of 160 capacities in the DNA tree that aren't active for most people. I call these spiritual capacities, ways of being and ways of doing. Beingness capacities and seeing capacities. All doing comes from seeing. Seeing is the master capacity. Seeing what? You ask. And it's a good question. Almost everything that is dysfunctional about the current humanity is the result of not seeing. The mind can't see. So the person can't see. The emphasis shifted to thinking. Instead of seeing. That is how the current version of humanity went the wrong way. My divine assignment has been to first diagnose and then develop a technology by which the emphasis can be put back on seeing. As it was meant to be. I am still in the diagnosis stage of this assignment. Every technology I have developed thus far furthered my knowledge to what degree the mind is in control. Like the Borg in Star Trek. Hive mind. No free will, even though that was the cornerstone of creation. Whether the universe was created or not, whether humanity was created or not, I am agnostic about it. I grew up in a socialist country with communist parents. But the longer I work in this field, the clearer it is becoming that there is, or at least there was, an intelligence at work. How, what, I don't know, and honestly, I don't care. The source I talk to 24/7 is not this intelligence. It is an in-between, go-between, like a personal envoy. For reasons not its own, interested in the work I do. Not curiosity. No, like an employer. There is a use for what I discover, what, how, when. I don't know and I don't care. My pay, other than what my clients hand me, is my own personal growth. And my sense that I'm soaring, at least occasionally, with spirit. But as interesting as it sounds, before I was hired to do this work, before I was accepted, I had a lot of work to do, on myself. And the most important of that work was to learn how to be, how to live, how to operate outside of the mind. It feels like floating, by the way. The mind is the river, or the ocean, and I am floating on the top of it. I barely get wet. When occasionally I am knocked off my game, I intimately experience the misery that was mine for 50 years of my 73. Then all I need to do is calm down, and allow the body to float again. Flailing, what is normal for you, is the reason you can't get out of the mind even for a moment. Trying. Wanting. Needing to. Should. All those are flailing. So why floating on the surface is useful? One of the things I most like about it is, I am not busy. I have nothing I have to do, I just do things. How? I look and see what wants to be done. But probably the most important thing about this state is this, my word has power. I don't think my words, I speak my words. No thinking involved. So no mind. Why that is so blissful? Because I can really create with my word. Create context. Yesterday I had a 90-minute call with a student of mine who about a month ago became my assistant in my work. There are many ways I could relate to him. As a student. As an employee. But I choose to relate to him as a partner. A partner is with whom your path aligns, at least for now. It is created. In language. With words. It is a context. Or said in another way, a space inside which only things consistent with partnership can live. So I know and you don't can't live there. So I am more than you can't live there. The organizing principle is the shared path. The conversation was to decide a course of action for the company. Meaning us. It was productive, I say, because of the space, the invented space. And it was beautiful. I wasn't teaching him anything. I wasn't controlling him. I wasn't arguing. We moved in a steady clip towards what may work. For the company and for us. I participated in a landmark education program, called Partnership Explorations, for the second time, in 2006. The leader said that the purpose of the course was to take us there, through a year-long study, hundreds of collages, 6 weekends, 50 or so weekly coaching calls. It failed. It even failed with me. My habitual way of being I'm more, my soul correction, forget thyself, was in the way. Not enough humility. I was still flailing, I still had something to fix, something to prove. Only when I started to connect to source, reliably, and was accepted to do the work that I started to look if my being more had any reality, or if it was a mind construct. Turned out it was a mind construct. You see, the mind considers anything and anyone a thing, and things can be compared. But when I was out of the mind, floating, I could see that inside all people are the same. Even if one knows more than the other, has more than the other, can do more than the other. In the world of persons, I am not more, I am the same. I may be a teacher, I may be a supervisor, I may be a guide, I may be the coach, but I am not more than you. I may see more than you, I may have a different job, but I am not more. And that is when life started to get more nurturing. Through seeing others as persons, I could see myself as a person. And between you and me, nothing is sweeter than that. You see, as a thing, everything bothers you. Everyone is pushing you around, offending you, bothers you, is in your way. That is what I call a life of hell. Even if it is just the life of an object among other objects. Being a bowling ball or a bowling pin. All the same. No power, no poetry, no self-love. Not the life the Creator meant for you. What are the bowling balls? Not just other humans, but the future, the goals, the desires, the shoulds, the ought-tos, the shouldn'ts, the dreams, the expectations, the whole mind-created pinball machine world the mind creates. It doesn't let you see that there is no joy in owning stuff, or even in accomplishing, winning, conquering. No joy. Joy is only present in the moment-to-moment reality. And that is where I live, and there is where I'd like to guide you to live, full-time, part-time, visit. Really up to you. If you are new, or even if you are a veteran student of mine or some other discipline, I would start with setting the record straight. Your original, life-altering statement that is running the main vector of your machine. That runs your life. In my experience, what you decided there is not what happened, and therefore now is the garbage and in the machine. The Three Wishes Workshop. The Three Wishes Workshop, a really simple workshop suitable for both beginners and advanced students, is the program where we either identify correctly, or get closer to the switch of your machine. Why is this important? If you organize your life around a garbage out goal or desire, then either you won't do anything for it, this is what is most frequent, or even if you by chance manage to get what you said you wanted, you won't be satisfied with it, it won't scratch the itch. In the Three Wishes exercise, we get sometimes straight to the seed level issue, and more often it takes several turns. It took me several turns. I priced the workshop low enough, that even if you have to do it 10 times, it won't break the bank. Book your Three Wishes workshop. Go to www.yourvibration.com/three-wishes. The workshop is held on Saturday afternoons, New York time. If you are in China, or thereabout, email me to see if I can schedule a workshop more convenient to your time zone. The next session is this coming Saturday, just after Thanksgiving. If you want to do it at another time, let me know. The workshop is almost full. I can only work with so many people. P.S. I want to acknowledge the blog post that inspired today's article. Read it if you are so inclined. If you have a high desire number, definitely read it. https://investorfieldguide.com/growth-about-goals/ I don't know the dude who wrote it. His vibration is 200. So that means you can be like him without having to have sky-high vibration.